This conference is being recorded.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's very nice to have all these good minds and voices together here on this call. We're thinking of this as a healthy environment and healthy food supply forum here being conducted during the special election in the 23rd Congressional District. And what I'm hoping is that the candidates will listen sooner or later. They'll read about this in the newspaper. They'll think about our good environmental, you know, visions and hopes, and then they will, you know, somehow bring government more into line with what we're hoping for. We have a beautiful congressional district. It's, you know, the Adirondacks. It's these many beautiful rivers that flow into the St. Lawrence River. The St. Lawrence River itself, the valley, the farmlands, the forests. It's such a beautiful place to live, yet we do have a few issues with environmental quality. Being downwind from so much of the rest of the United States, where the air pollution that is generated elsewhere, you know, comes through here and affects us, that's a real significant issue. Having our wonderful St. Lawrence River downstream from the Great Lakes, which are heavily contaminated, both to because of discharges into them directly and this air pollution matter again, we're in this kind of like place where it really matters a lot to be great environmental advocates. I'd like to get going without, you know, saying any more. Let me first introduce our, you know, our speakers. We have John Sheehan, the communications director with Adirondack Council. We have Robin McClellan with the Seed Corn Organization. We have Ellen Connett with Fluoride Alert. We have Lou Shepard with Cancer Action New York, and we have myself with Cancer Action Network. And so, without, you know, any more said, would you give us, you know, some of your visions for the environmental future of the 23rd CD, John?
Hi, John Sheehan from the Adirondack Council. I represent an organization that has members now in all 50 United States, and our basic mission is to protect the natural character and ecological integrity of the Adirondack Park. We are concerned, obviously, with acid rain and climate change and with mercury pollution, and spend a lot of our time lobbying Washington to try and have an impact on those issues. Right now, the U.S. Senate is considering a climate change bill that may or may not include a section that will address sulfur, mercury, and nitrogen pollution from power plants at the same time. But there are also independent bills floating around out there that could have an impact as well. We have an opportunity through our congressional delegation to try to get the issue of acid rain into federal legislation for the first time since 1990. We've essentially had the program created from those amendments of the Clean Air Act in 1990 in place since 1995, but that program is about to sunset, and the Clean Air Interstate Rule that EPA had put in place a couple of years ago was vacated by a court and reinstated briefly. EPA is in the process of rewriting it right now. So it may be 2011 before we actually see a new set of federal regulations that would control sulfur and nitrogen from the places that cause acid rain in the Adirondacks. We are hoping that Congress will take action in the meantime and essentially take the cuts that were proposed in the Clean Air Interstate Rule and either make them a little deeper cuts or on a little faster time schedule and impose them as a federal law rather than a regulation that can be more easily struck down by a court bench. Essentially, the courts, when striking down clean air legislation over the past 20 years, clean air regulations over the past 20 years, have essentially said that they don't see evidence that Congress intended EPA to do X and Y. And unfortunately, that has resulted in some of the best initiatives out of the Clinton administration and the occasional good initiative from the Bush administration to be nullified by courts. And this is something that we'd really like to see come to an end. Also, the Adirondack Park has 22 agricultural districts within it, and we want to do what we can to help encourage what is the one of the fastest growing markets for farmers in the area, and that is direct sales, retail sales to the public. the farms in the Adirondacks seem to be finding an easier time producing, especially vegetables and other rather perishable items, for a local audience that doesn't require a huge amount of transportation. And we really like to encourage that, not only as a means of helping the farms remain in existence, but also in keeping the region's carbon footprint down and helping people consume less fuel to get food on the table. I think I've gone on for at least 3 minutes now. I'm happy to turn it over to the next person.
So, Robin, you're up next.
My name is Robin McClellan. I'm the Speaker of the Council of Seed Corn. Seed Corn is an organization that supports groups that work in environment, social justice, sustainable community, and sustainable environment. We do not take stands on issues, so what I've done is put together the questions that I would have asked the congressional candidates, and these questions came primarily from organizations that we have worked with, like Community Energy Services and Garden Share, and then some that I came up with for my work in toxics. So the questions on food security, given the recent increase in unemployment and poverty, where do the candidates stand on funding for food stamps, WIC, senior nutrition, and school lunch? Where do they stand on the issue of milk pricing and current agricultural policies that subsidize corn and soy and the connection between cheap food, nutrition, and health issues? In the area of energy, what position do you take on legislation to reduce greenhouse gas emission? Should coal-fired power plants be phased out? What is your position on nuclear power? Should the U.S. government and military make all of their buildings and operations as energy efficient as possible? So, what will you do to support this? Should corn and corn-based ethanol receive government subsidies? In the area of toxic cleanups, given that General Motors did not complete the cleanup of the Messina plant before it was taken over by Motors Liquidation Corporation, which is the bad GM, what should be done to facilitate the completion of that cleanup? Does the responsibility lie with the government through Superfund? We know that every solution to an environmental problem holds the seeds of the next environmental problem. What is your approach to economic development with regard to environmental safeguards? And those are the questions that I would have asked the candidates had they deemed fit to be here.
That's great questions, and I wish they were here, and somehow I'm certain they're going to hear them one way or the other, and maybe they'll think about it at least. I'm going to ask Ellen, is it okay if Lou goes ahead of you because he has a time issue and he would like to just get off the call? Okay, this is Lou Shepherd. Go ahead, Lou.
Okay, I'm a member of Cancer Action and have been for some years. My work experience was working in laboratories, doing analytical work and product development. And I'm very much interested in the kind of chemical pollution that's in the ground and in the water and in the air. And I just read recently that there was, since 1800, about 80,000 chemicals have been introduced into the environment, and very, very few of those have ever been tested to see if they cause cancer or any other defects in, for example, in birth control. So I do what I can to get word out on ways of changing lifestyle and that sort of thing to prevent cancer. And I'm very upset with the way the FDA operates their rulings on pharmaceuticals and not allowing alternative medicine to really be used more by our citizens. So I support Don and his views, and hope that the people that are being elected will petition the federal government to pass some rules to educate the public on the kind of pollution that they're dealing with, and so that they can do the best they can to make some changes in their lifestyle to prevent cancer. Thank you for this opportunity. Bye now.
Yes, thanks, Lou. We're ready for what you're going to say to us, Ellen.
Okay, hi. Thank you, Don, for the opportunity. I'm with a group called Fluoride Action Network. It's a project of the American Environmental Health Studies Project. It's a nonprofit. And basically, our major role is in educating the public, media, regulatory agencies on the issue of fluoridation of drinking water. And it seems a safe thing. Everybody thinks it's safe. It's good for your teeth, et cetera, et cetera. And the problem is there's many, many issues involved with this. I agree with what you said, Don, about long-range transport of pollutants into our county. And when it comes to fluoride, whatever one ingests, i.e. through drinking water, or breathes in, 50% of that, the fluoride emissions or fluoride in your drinking water, will be retained in your body. It bioaccumulates in your body. We in our North Country are surrounded by fluoride or fluorine emitting industries such as Corning in the Canton area, a company called Investa in Maitland, Canada, in Ontario, just across the river. We have the aluminum industries in Messina, major fluorine-emitting industries. And so just in our little neck of the woods, we have a heck of a lot of fluorine circulating. And we have some of our major communities that fluoridate. We have Potsdam, Governor, Messina, Ogdensburg. And there might be one or two others. Thankfully, Canton got it out. And the concern is this, if we're interested in food, et cetera, and health and protecting health, is that mother's milk contains extraordinarily low levels of fluoride. So the breastfed infant gets very, very little, extremely little fluoride. But the bottle-fed baby, when the formula is reconstituted with fluoridated drinking water, that baby gets approximately 250 times the level of fluoride compared to a breastfed baby. Other things, in 2006, a landmark report was produced by the National Academy of Sciences. They called fluoride a neurotoxin. They called fluoride an endocrine disruptor, and many other things. It was a very good report on the toxicology of fluoride. And so our mission basically is to help educate people to understand that there are many risks involved in the fluoridation of drinking water. And beyond that, on a more philosophical level, is to try to get science at the regulatory level, at the state level, and at the county level to get people interested in science to be independent, to question. It's easy to say that, but when you get to the fluoride issue, you see you see the complete opposite. So that's where I am at. It's Fluoride Action Network, and that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years.
Well, thank you for doing that and, you know, keeping that part of this this health and environment that we're trying to deal with, you know, going along so powerfully. Hi, this is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network, and my question for the candidates was and is and will be, because we're also putting this question to the elected members of our legislative bodies at the federal level, we're asking them, will you help to create an act that would provide for education of the public on this whole subject area of pollutant carcinogen exposure reduction? We feel that it's it is good to do work in government and outside government to reduce the levels of pollutants in the water and the food and the air and the soil. But that is not enough. Certainly, more importantly, the public needs to be warned about the existence of the pollutants in their environment, in their food, in their milk, in their meat, in their water, in their air. Warned of that so that then they can do this very simple thing. It would be to understand and then avoid the exposure. Avoid exposure is what we're all about, really. We just feel it. The people have to have this knowledge that they can use. Just like what Ellen's saying about the fluoride in the drinking water. Those mothers, if they know that and they have this information, then they could decide, okay, I'm not going to give my baby, I'm not going to put this fluoridated water into this formula and mix that up and feed it to my baby because it's not good for the baby. The same thing is true for other foods and other materials. You know, what would you do? Would you tell your daughter, we're going to work away at this open burning issue. We're going to work on this and work on this. And there's a lot of it going on, sorry, but we're going to work on it. And you will get your exposure reduction. You will avoid your exposure to dioxins this way. It's going to be when the other people stop burning. And then never even tell her that in the food, the milk and the meat, it's the animal fat that contains the dioxins and these other persistent lipophilic pollutants. We need to tell these people, the mothers and fathers and the daughters and the sons and, you know, the people that live here and have to be trying to be healthy here and have to eat what's available here. We need to tell them that there are choices they can make. We need to tell them that and these other persistent pollutants are in animal fat and that it is not healthy to eat any significant amount of that and get this whole cocktail of pollutant carcinogens into their body. You know, for some reason we're seeing a girl in California, 11 years old, breast cancer. A girl in the Midwest, 13 years old, breast cancer. 12 girls in New York State during the time period 2002 through 2006. 12 girls between the ages of 15 and 19 diagnosed with breast cancer here in the Empire State. Well, it's not an empire of good health, and we want to change that. And by having that knowledge provided via this interaction between federal government doing this act, this Pollutant Carcinogen Exposure Reduction Act, all about educating people about how they can get their exposure down by what they do themselves, by having this knowledge about where the pollution is, basically, you know, what's it in, how do we stay away from it. You know, we're not asking them to ban eating animal fat. We're just asking them to tell people that there's poison in it and they need to eat very little of it until the poison's gone. And that's really all I have to say, and we're just going to keep asking that over and over again until, you know, they get so kind of, like, concerned about it, and they just realize, you know, people are really starting to think. They think a lot, in fact, and they're starting to think that government is really letting them down. You know, we always felt that the mandate of government health entities was to protect the public health and do whatever it takes to protect the public health. They're doing nothing to protect the public health when it comes to pollution and cancer in particular. Thanks.
Don, can I say one thing? It's something you just said?
Certainly.
Actually, there was a National Academy of Sciences report on this very issue you're talking about, of the dioxins in animal fat, et cetera. And they advise that young girls not be given be given only low-fat type of foods. Their major recommendation, because they said of the buildup, in the time these girls become pregnant, that is passed on to their babies.
Right.
And to interrupt that, they were basically begging for education on not to allow parents, to tell parents, don't give your children high-fat content foods.
And why can't we have that education? We have these great people. We have these great people asking for that, like Dr. Carpenter and these other people who are on that Institute of Medicine, you know, panel. Why can't the government just listen to them, think about the health of the, you know, and do something, you know, to educate? Because this education thing is so hard. We try to educate in schools and at colleges and these different things, and there's all kind of obstacles. You'd be amazed how people don't want to hear this. And it's all about the money. the money doesn't want to hear it, because there will be some money losses to the food animal, you know, the animal foods industry. It has to happen. They have to sell less, or people are going to keep having the same amount of poison in their bodies. It's really very simple.
Well, I think it's a necessity to just demand of those agencies, of public health agencies, to do their job. And it's their responsibility to educate the public on this. And we
their
have to keep their feet to the fire on this. I mean, they're not doing their job.
Yep. Well, I think we've said a lot for the candidates to take into account. Thank you guys all for being on the call, both the wonderful, wonderful media that makes it so that, you know, this wasn't just done among in the choir, so to speak. At least the candidates are going to know more about it now. And we'll put our radio program up in a day or, you know, hopefully within 24 hours.
Yes.
I'm sure. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Say, Don, have you tried to contact any of their campaigns with your questions, and have you gotten any kind of response?
I put those questions, I sent the specific question that I had about this act for pollution, you know, pollutant carcinogen exposure reduction. I sent that personally to their campaign headquarters, talked to people in the campaign, you know, sent them the information right there. They had it all. They never gave me one word of answer to what they would do to help out preventing breast cancer and all these other cancers that are caused by pollution. Not a word.
All right.
Don, you spoke to the St. Lawrence County Legislature recently about trying to get some movement on an education program related to your animal fats campaign.
Yep.
What do you see happening? How do you feel legislators handled it? Do you think they were listening?
I think they were listening because they know this issue. The open burning really helped us a lot here. It got us on the page. They understand this. I talked to John Montan afterwards and asked him to give us an invitation to address the Environmental Management Council here in St. Lawrence County on that very same subject area. He said he'd talk to Legislator Perry. I'm sure that Legislator Perry is going to encourage him to have the EMC listen to what we had to say and then do something about it, because it's just not listening, it's doing something. And we're just asking, you know how the EMC made comments on that open burning reg and helped a lot in getting that open burning reg done from your state? They can do the same thing on this regulation, well, this change in regulations that we're asking the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to do. There's a docket there. I've laid out all the details. I made it just this very simple matter of, you know, just basically you just got to, like, visit that website. If the EMC would learn about this whole matter of dioxin-contaminated animal fat that's just circulating in our food supply, because that's how much dioxin is in it. It's not like these animals were exposed to some kind of industrial accident or something. It's just how much dioxin is there because of the open burning and everything else that's going on. That animal fat being fed to animals like chickens and hogs and cattle, that just keeps the dioxin levels at an unnecessarily high level. We don't want any of them in the food, let alone just doing this dumb thing that makes it much, 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 much worse. So the Environmental Management Council could learn about that, place their comments in favor of banning that practice of feeding this dioxin animal fat to food animals, and that would surely make a huge difference in how FDA is responding to our petition. Because right now, they're basically acting like this has existed since 2004. What's the big story now? You know, why should we all of a sudden do something when we refuse to do anything for all those years? Well, the difference is that people are getting more and more concerned about girls getting breast cancer and all these things, and I think they're going to listen.
Have you had any reports of people following these advisories against animal fats, curtailing their intake of these in their food supply, and still getting cancer? People who are eating organic, healthy food getting having these problems.
I don't get that kind of information. I don't know if anybody's looking at that. I know that this Dr. Schechter, that I have quite a good relationship with, he's written a book on dioxins. And what he is interested in, we've been looking carefully, more and more carefully at the food supply. It's really good the way organic, say organic animal food producers, say the people that raise organic beef, organic chickens, organic, you know, hogs. It's my understanding, and I've looked at it closely, and I've had this good conversation about this with the Organic Trade Association, and they're stating, and they actually showed me the regs, you know, that state that it is prohibited to feed animal fat to organic food animals other than fish. So if you're eating organic, you know, meats and eggs and, you know, dairy, other than fish, you know, if those are the animal fats you're consuming rather than fish fat, then you're getting certainly a considerable amount less dioxin in your animal fat than you will be getting from these commercial operations that feed the animal fat right along in there, and so they're keeping it higher level in their animals.
Yes, but Don, there's an addendum to that, and that organic farmers cannot protect their pasturing cows from getting dioxin because it is deposited.
Exactly.
The airborne dioxin is deposited onto the pastures. So there's no way they can protect their fields from that. What we have to do to protect them is to stop emitting this stuff.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, folks. All of my questions have been answered. Thank you.
Hey, Scott. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Cheerio.
Yeah, thanks, Owen. Thanks a lot.
Right. Thanks.
Hey, it's John.
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Good to hear your voice. It's been a long time, my friend.
How you been?
Good. And I won't take up time on this conference call, but I did. I've been following your career with interest. It's a little bit higher profile than mine.
Well, I have to remember to look you up next time I'm in Potsdam. I get to teach up there every once in a while. So,
Do you? Where do you teach?
At Potsdam State, with my niece Heather Sullivan's the head of the sociology department there, and
Heather's a good friend of mine, and I'm going to extend an invitation. Let me skip the date. I'm doing a little get together for Garden Share.
Oh, great.